Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Dav Kuf Lamed Dalet. Today's Dav has been dedicated by the Asa family in memory of Acham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam. Ruach Hashem Tanichinu Began Eden. Amen. Today's Dav is also being studied the Elul Nishmat of Raham Ben Esther. Amen. We are starting on Kuf Lamed Dalet Amud Rishon, two lines from the top. And the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, Lo Shahak Me'erev Shabbat. We learned in the Mishnah that one of the things that they used to use during the Brit Milah in order to heal the wound was kamun, cumin. And they would grind it before Shabbat. So the Mishnah said if they didn't grind it before Shabbat, so then they would grind it on Shabbat, however in an abnormal way. How? They would put it in their mouth, chew on it, and then put it on the Milah. Tanu Rabbanan. Devarim she'en osim la Milah b'Shabbat. Things that you cannot do for the Brit Milah on Shabbat. Osim la b'Yom Tov. However, those same items you're allowed to do if the milah falls out on Yom Tov. For example, Shohakin la kamun. On Yom Tov, there was the Brit Milah, you're actually allowed to grind the kamun in the regular way. The torfin la yayin v'shemen. And for that matter, you're allowed to mix yayin v'shemen. We said there was a certain mixture of oil and wine that also used to be a remedy for the Brit Milah. And on Shabbat, we said it's forbidden to actually mix this mixture well. Actually, that she holds, it's a suit to actually beat it. Why? Because it looks like you're preparing it for cooking. However, on Yom Tov, it would be permissible not only to mix it, meaning put the two together, but you're actually able to beat it very well. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Abaye Rabbi Yosef, Mai Shena Kamun B'Yom Tov. What's the reason why you're telling me that the kamun on Yom Tov, you're allowed to grind it regularly? Dehazeh l'kedera. Because on Yom Tov, we know you're allowed to do things that have to do with cooking. And since the kamun is worthy to put in the kedera, into the pot of food, which means, after all, it is a spice. And therefore, since it has usability, meaning it's be able to be used for a kedera, so the rabbis were lenient to crush it also for the Brit Milah. So the Gemara says, for the same logic, Yayin v'shemen hazeh nameh b'shabbat leholeh. You could use the mixture of yayin and shemen on Shabbat to give to a cholet she'en bo sakana, as we're going to see in a moment. So since you're allowed to use yayin and shemen in order to give to a cholet, to a sick person that's not in danger, so you should be allowed to make it on Shabbat in order to give it to the child that was just circumcised. I mean, just like you're lenient on Yom Tov. Why? To crush the kamun in the regular way? Because you're telling me there's a way to do it, there's something you could use it for, meaning you could use it to put in your kederah, to spice up your pots of food. So to on Shabbat, it should be permissible to make this mixture, because we know it's permissible to make it for a choleh, she'en bo sakana on Shabbat. So therefore, for the same reason, it should be permissible to make it for the Brit Milah. Detanya. Had it ever brighta, en turfin yayin v'shemen choleh b'Shabbat. One opinion says, you're not allowed to mix and beat this mixture of yayin and shemen for a sick person on Shabbat. Amar b'shomen en l'azab b'shomen b'mi'ir, af turfin yayin v'shemen. But the b'mi'ir says, you actually can make this mixture for a chole. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Pam achat hash Rabbi Meir b'me'av. One time Rabbi Meir had some intestinal problems. U'bikashnu litrof lo yayin v'shemen. And we wanted on Shabbat to make him this mixture of yayin v'shemen. Ve'lo hinachnu. But he did not let us. Amar nulo. So we told him, Tevarecha yibatlu b'chayecha. Are your words going to be nullified in your life? Meaning, Rabbi, you're the one that told us it's permissible to make this mixture on Shabbat for Choleh. So why are you telling us not to do it? Amar lanu, so he answered, Afal pi she'ani omer kach, even though I did say that it's permissible, v'chaverai omrim kach, and my colleagues say it's not permissible. Miyamai lo mila'ani libi la'avor al devre haverai. Says, I never presume to go against my colleagues, which means my colleagues argue on me, I'm mahmir like my colleagues, even though he himself, his shita was, it's permissible. But he said, since my colleagues said asur, so personally, I never went against the opinion of my colleagues. So the Gemara says, "Hu nihu de mahmir nafsheh." Yeah, Rabbi Meir on himself was mahmir. But for everybody else, it's mutar. And then we go back to the question, since it's mutar to make this mixture on Shabbat for a Cholei Shein Bo Sakana, so why shouldn't it be permissible on Shabbat to make this mixture for the Brit Milah as well? So the Gemara says, Hatam lo ba'elicha. When you're making it for the sick person, it does not need licha. Licha, Rashi says, litarfo ul'arbo yafe yafe. It doesn't need to be beaten very well. You just mix it together, and you beat it lightly, and it's ready. However, when it comes to the potion for the Brit Milah, not only do you mix it together, and not only do you beat it, but you actually have to beat it very well. So it's different. It's not the same way you make it for a Cholei Shein Bo Sakana. And therefore, the Mishnah said it is forbidden to do it in that way. Which means, if you were making it for Cholei Shein Bo Sakana, what would you do? You'd add the ingredients together, you'd mix it lightly, it would be permissible. However, if you were doing it for the Brit Milah, you'd have to do it much more vigorously, let's say. And therefore, it's different. And therefore, we don't want you to do it in such a way on Shabbat, again, because it would look like you're preparing it for Bishul. It doesn't look like you're doing it for Cholei Shein Bo Sakana because that's not the way you do it. It looks like you're preparing it for Bishul. So the Gemara says, fine. Hakaname na'abid velo lilich. Okay, so it should be permissible at least to make it on Shabbat without mixing it vigorously. So the Gemara says, you're right. Hainu diktani. It said that in the Mishnah. Noten ze b'fnei atzmo, v'ze b'fnei atzmo. What does it say in the Mishnah? Don't mix it, but just put each one separately, and actually according to Rashi, be able to mix it lightly, and you'd be able to use it. So really, that is the way you can make this mixture on Shabbat, by mixing the two ingredients and just giving it a light beat, and that would be permissible. To do it vigorously, to beat it, that would be asur. Taru Rabbanan, new point, we have a braita, en misanenin tahardal b'misanenet shelo. You're not allowed to strain the mustard in its strainer on Shabbat. Again, it seems that, or Yom Tov for that matter, Kol Sheken on Shabbat. The Gemara is going to explain because it looks like borer. It seems in the mustard they also had a chaff to it. So when they would sift it, the chaff would remain on top. That's the bad part of it. And then let's say the seed would go down. So the Gemara is going to say it's not actual borer. Borer is one of the 39 melachot, but the Gemara is going to say it's mehzi kiborer. It looks like borer, because Tosafot explains that chaff that remains on top is actually edible as well. It's really not a non-edible item, but it's going to be asur because it looks like borer. That's the shita of the Tosafot. That's actually the way it's brought down in the halakha. So it's not really that you're separating good from bad. Really, even the bed actually is good. Ve'en mamtikin oto begahelet. Nor are you allowed to sweeten the mustard with a coal. What did they used to do in the olden days? It seems the mustard has a sharpness. So in order to sweeten it, to make it edible, they would take, let's say, a heap of mustard seed. They would take a coal, and they would bury it in the heap of mustard. Now the coal would extinguish, and somehow the hot coal would sweeten the mustard. Obviously that's going to be asur on Yom Tov. Why? Because you're not allowed to extinguish a coal on Yom Tov. Amale Abayin Rabbi Yosef, Maishina Mehaditnan. What is it different that we learned in the Mishnah? Notnin Betza B'mishanenet Shel Hardal. It says on Yom Tov, you're allowed to take a Betza, an egg, and you're allowed to put it in a misanenet of hardal, in a strainer that's used for mustard seed. What are you actually doing? you're straining the egg. The egg has the white and the yellow. Right? The white part of the egg is called the helmon, and the yellow part is called the helmon. Now, the helmon, the yellow part, was used in order to give color to the mustard. That's where they used to get the yellow of the mustard. They used to strain the egg, so the yellow part comes out, and they would mix it with the mustard. But the halakha says, even though you're splitting the helbon and the helmon, it is permissible on Shabbat. So the Gemara is asking, you're telling me you can't split the mustard itself, the mustard seed. What's the difference? You'll have to strain an egg? So what should be the difference? Here you're separating the mustard from the chaff of it, and here you're separating the helmon from the helmon. What's the difference? So Yama Amale, Hatam lo mihzike borer. Haka mihzike borer. A big difference. By the egg, it doesn't look like borer at all. However, by the mustard seed, it looks like borer. So we explained to you why the mustard seed, it looks like borer. It's not actual borer, but it looks like borer. Why? Because bottom line, you are separating a good from the bad. Why is it not actual borer? Tap Tosfot, and the only Tosfot on the page, miyu borer lo have shegam apsolet ra'uy la'achila. As we said, it's not definite, a full-fledged borer, because the psolet is also ra'uy for eating. So the egg, the question is, why isn't that borer? That's not borer at all. So there's different opinions. Rashi by us holds the reason why it's not borer, because at the end of the day, everything is strained into the strainer. Both the yellow goes through, and also the white goes through. The helmon and the helmon go through. What is borer usually? One thing stays on top, and something goes to the bottom. You're separating. Here, it strains out. Maybe the yellow will go out first, and then the white will go out. But bottom line, since it's all going to end up getting strained, so therefore it's not considered a borer. Rashi later on, in a few pages, says a little different sevara. They say, here it's not considered that you're being borer ochel. Like the isura borer, let's say, is by food. Which means you're taking a food, one part to eat, and the other part, garbage, refuse. That's already borer. This is not the case. Because he says, here, what are you using the yellow for? Not to eat. You're using the yellow for color, in order to color the mustard. That's not considered already ochel anymore. That's considered the color. So even though you're separating, you're leaving the white here and let's say the yellow for the mustard, but since you're not separating it to eat, so therefore it's not considered borer ochel, and therefore the laws of borer do not apply. Mashiach, when it comes to the mustard, you're actually separating in order to eat the mustard. However, it's not full-fledged borer as we learned in the Tosafot. Ve'en mamtikin oto begachel, it is forbidden to sweeten it with the coal. As we said, they would take a coal, they would bury it in the mustard seed, and it would extinguish, right? And that would cause it to sweeten. Ve'atanya mamtikin oto begachel. What do you mean? We have a braita that says you can sweeten it with a coal. Like kashya, kan begachelet shel matechet, kan begachelet shel etz. It depends what you're doing with it. If you're using a wooden, a piece of wood that you lit on fire, it's forbidden. Why? Because when you extinguish a piece of wood, what does it turn into? A coal. Now that's already shayach to isu de olaita. The law of extinguishing was said by an item that makes a coal. And therefore, a piece of wood, when you extinguish it, what happens? Turns into a coal. That already is possible to be sudoraita, so therefore they don't want you to do that. However, a metal coal, let's say you take a piece of metal, and you make it burning hot, and you stick it out into the mustard, it'll extinguish. Min ha-Torah, that is not considered extinguishing. You're right, let's say it's isudirabanan. Isudirabanan, the rabbis waive the isudirabanan because of simchat yom tov, to make the mustard. So therefore, while it's permissible to take a metal coal and bury it in the mustard seed, lematekoto, it is forbidden to take a wooden coal in order to put it in. Again, the difference being, the wood would be the oraita if you extinguish it, and the metal would be the rabbanan. The rabbis waved the rabbanan, mishum simchat yom tov. Amar Abaye Rabbi Yosef. So Abaye asked Rabbi Yosef, mai shina mebisa agumre? Well, you're telling me you can't extinguish on Yom Tov? That's the whole Isur of it, because you don't want to extinguish the coal? What's the difference between meat on the coals? which as we know on Yom Tov, it's permissible to put meat on the coals, even though the juice of the meat is going to drip on the coals and extinguish it. So therefore, what's the difference? Why is this extinguishing permissible and that extinguishing forbidden? Big difference. The meat, you have no choice. You have no choice. You can't prepare the meat from the day before. It's going to spoil. So therefore, you have to prepare the meat today. You have no choice to do it today. And if that's what happens, it extinguishes. But the mustard, you could have sweetened it from the day before. So therefore, where you have an option to do it from the day before, do it the day before. We have no option. You have to do it today, like cooking the meat. Then it would be permissible even to extinguish while cooking. Is it permissible to make cheese on Yom Tov? Amar le asur. He told them, it is forbidden. So he asked them, my shena milisha. What's the difference between kneading? Meaning you're allowed to knead dough on Yom Tov to make bread. Making cheese is very similar, because you're also mixing the milk and the other ingredients, and you're churning it in order to make the cheese. So what's the difference? If I can knead dough, why can I make cheese? Amar le hatam lo efshar. Hacha efshar. Again, you have no option to make the bread from the day before. Because already, you can't compare hot bread and fresh than day-old bread. And Halakha says, if it's better on Yom Tov, so you could do it on Yom Tov. So to make bread on Yom Tov, no problem. But the cheese, you could have made it from the day before. So therefore, we're not going to be lenient. So the Gemara says, didn't the rabbis from Nehardeah say, Givina bat yoma me'alya? They said, fresh cheese made that day is very, very good. Implying what? That also the cheese is better when it's made on that day than the day before. Gemara says, "Hachi kamre da afilu givina bat yoma me'alya." They were saying even cheese made on the same day is good, but all the more so the day before. For sure, when you have older cheese is better. So therefore, when it comes to cheese, you could have made it the day before because it's actually better. So therefore, we're not going to allow you to make the cheese on Yom Tov. But bread, obviously, is better when it's fresh. So therefore, you can make it on Yom Tov. And the Gemara continues. In Osin Lahaluk. Okay, so the Mishnah discussed that you're not allowed to make the sock, we'll call it, in order to cover the Brit Milah after the incision. They used to cover it with a certain type of, let's say, a bandage. Well, it's really a haluk. It's like a certain type of garment. They used to just slip on the Eved in order to protect it, in order, as we said, to cause the flesh that it doesn't ride up. Now the Gemara is going to give us about 10 different pieces of advice that Abaye's nurse gave him regarding different types of healings. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abaye, Amra li im." Literally, my mother told me Abaye was a yatom, so they learned that it was actually the nurse that told them this. Hai haluk diinuka. This haluk that they place on the child after the Brit Milah, lefanya, you should turn lesitra its hem le'illae on top. I'll explain what that means in a second. Dilma midbak garda mine, because maybe some of the threads will attach to the mila itself. The atelide kirut shafka, and will cause to rip off the ever. And therefore, what are they saying? When you have the cover and you put it on the inside, there's some threads. On the top of it, right, where the hem is, on top there's some threads. You don't want those threads to attach to the Eved itself of the Milah, because now when you're going to pull it off, those threads might attach, and Chas v'Shalom, you might actually cause the child to be a Kerut Shafka, means when you cut the actual member. So therefore, what do they say? When you put the Haluk on, turn it over, like make a cuff on top, in order that the threads at the hem will not be touching the flesh itself, but they will be facing outside. So that was the first piece of advice. Imed Abaye, the nurse of Abaye, Avda Kisteta Lefalga. She made a lining for half the haluk. which means she didn't turn it over. Well, what she did was, on the top of the haluk where you had those threads, she put an insert, a lining there, in order that the threads will be covered by this lining, so it will not touch the evid itself. Kisteta is a lining, the faga, for half of the haluk. Amar Abaye, hayinuka telet le haluk. If you don't have a haluk, if you don't have this item to put on the child, laite belita, take a rag, the eat le shifta, that has a hem to it, velichreche le shifta le tatae. Put the part that has the hem, place that on the bottom part of the bit milah, in order that's the tight part of the item, so it'll hold tightly over there. And again, double over the top part. A similar item. If you don't have an official haluk, take a the rag and fashion it in such a way that the tight part on the bottom, so it doesn't get loose, and on the top, just double it over so the threads do not cause the ever to get pulled off. Amar Abaye, Amrali Em, the nurse told him, Hayinuka delo yadiya mefakte. There's a child that his back side, meaning where the anus of the child is, there's no hole. It's totally closed over there. Lo yada mefakte. You don't know, mefakte literally means where it comes out, which means where the hole is. What are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to help the child? First, you have to rub oil over that whole area. And then take the child to the sunlight. The oil will cause the skin to shine. Now you're going to put it in the sun, right over the flesh. And where you see transparency in the skin, take a barley and rip that area, rip it across, down and across, which means it seems where the hole is, it'll be very thin, that area, and therefore in the sun, when you look at that area, you'll see a transparency in that spot, and just rip it across with a barley corn. But don't use metal. Why? Mishum dezarif, because it's going to cause inflammation. The nurse said, "Hayinuka delo mayitz." If there's a certain child that does not want a nurse from its mother, the reason is mekar dekar pume. That means his lips must be cold. And therefore you have to warm his lips up in order to get him to nurse. So what do? Maitakante, what's the solution? Litu kasa gumre. Bring, let's say, a cup of coals. And vilinkete le ladefume. And place them next to the lips of the child. Dehayim pume. Now his lips will become warm. Umayitz. And now he will begin to nurse. The nurse told him, Hayinuka delo minashte. There's a child that is not breathing properly. So therefore, what are you supposed to do? So the Gemara says, she says, En neshima nikeret bo, which means his chest is not moving while he's breathing, which means he's not obviously breathing the proper way. So the Gemara says, Linfefe benavata, fan him with a fan. And what's going to happen? And that'll cause him to start breathing the normal way. There is a child that does not breathe easily. He breathes, but it's hard for him. Lite salita deime. Bring the afterbirth of his mother, meaning the placenta of the mother, vilishneke alave, and smear it on the child, umahave, and that will cause him to start breathing easily. Amarabaye amraliem, hayinuka dekatin. You have a certain child that is very thin. He's emaciated. Laitu lesilta deime. Take the embryo, or the placenta, the afterbirth of his mother, v'lishreke, and smear it on the child, elave, on him, mikutna le'ulma, from the narrow part to the wide part. It seems the afterbirth starts off narrow and then gets wide. So when you smear it on him, start on the narrow part, so the narrow part goes on him first, and then the wide part goes on him. It's a siman. She's going from thin, and you want him to go to become wide, like the placenta. Now what about the opposite? V'i alim. If, let's say, the child is bloated, not because of he's eating food, but because of a problem, the child is bloated. So mi'ulma likutna. Do the opposite way. Take the afterbirth and rub it against the child, this time starting from the wide part, rubbing it across from the wide to the narrow part, in order that the child will become thinned out. Amar Rabbi Yamin Aliyem, the nurse told him, Hayinukad this sumak. If you see a child that is red, he has a red complexion, Da'akate lo iblah be'dama. That means the blood yet has not got absorbed into his body yet. It's still on the outside, like. So lirtehu le, so you have to actually warm him. I'm sorry, I take it back. We have to wait. We have to wait until the blood goes into the system. And then, you can circumcise him. But don't circumcise him before. Because Chas v'Shalom, if you circumcise him then all his blood can come out. Because it's not yet in his system. And the siman is when the child is red. Diyarok, if the child is green or a yellowish, ve'akate lo nafal be'dameh. So that already is, he does not have yet enough blood yet. And therefore, litrehu, that's what it should have said, I should have read that before. Also, litrehu means wait, ad nafal bedama, until his blood starts to, multiply, and then you can circumcise him. Titania, we have a bright time, Rabbi Natan. He says, one time I went to one of the islands. Ubat isha ahat lefanai, and a lady came in front of me. Shemala ben arishon vamit. She circumcised the first child and he died. Sheni vamit. The second child and he died. Shelishi ve'ato lefanai. The third child she brought in front of me. Ve'itiv shu adom. I saw that he was very red. Amarti la, I told her, Hamtini lo ad shiblah bo damo. Wait, don't circumcise him yet. Wait till his blood becomes absorbed into his body. Hamtina lo ad shiblah bo damo. She waited. Umala oto vechaya. And he lived. Vayu korin oto Natana Babli al shemi. And they named the child Natana Babli after Rabbi Natan. Shuv pam achat halakti l'medinat Kaputkia. And another time I went to the place called Kaputkia. Ubat isha achat lefanai. A lady came in front of me. Shemala ben arishon umet. The first child she circumcised died. Sheni umet. The second son died. Shilishi eviato lefanai reitiv shu yarok. Says, I saw that he was yellow. Hitzatzti bo. So I looked at him. V'lo ra'iti bo damberit. He says, I looked at the milah and I saw that the blood yet hadn't gotten to the veins of the brit milah. Amarti lo, hamtini lo ad shiyipol bo damo. Wait for his blood in order to get to all his body. Now she says for two reasons. Number one, obviously the child is still weak yet, because his blood is not circulating yet over his body. And number two, the mitzvah brit milah is to have hatafat dam berit. The mitzvah is, when you cut the milah, to have blood. And therefore, if you're going to cut this area over here, there's no blood yet. So therefore, you don't have the mitzvah. So he says, wait. The Gemara concludes, v'imtina lo, and she waited for the child to heal. Umala oto, and she circumcised him. V'chaya. And he lived. V'yu korin shemo, Natana Babli al shemi. And they named that child Natana Babli on the name of the rabbi. And we turn to the Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Marhisin et hakatan. It is permissible to bathe the child. We're talking about bathing the child with hot water. Ben lifnei hamila uben lachar hamila.
before the Milah and after Milah. This is referring to even on Shabbat. Now it seems in the olden days this was a custom. The children had a certain sakana that if you didn't give them a hot bath before the Milah and after, it would be dangerous. So therefore the halakha says you can take hot water and bathe the child, whether before the Milah and after the Milah. They do not do this today. Mishnah continues, Umizalefin alav biyad abalo bekeli. You're allowed to take the hot water and mizalef. Mizalef means to sprinkle. You sprinkle the water on the child with your hands, but not with a vessel. Now right away the Gemara is going to ask, what are you talking? You just told me you can bathe the child. Now you're telling me you sprinkle? Bathing obviously is a regular bath. What does sprinkling got to do with it? You contradicted yourself in two back-to-back statements. The Gemara will ask. Gemara continues, Mishnah continues, Abir Hazam Nazariah Omer, Marchisin et Katan, Bayom Eshilishi, Shechal Yod B'Shabbat. He says it's permissible to bathe the child on the third day of the circumcision that falls out on Shabbat, meaning the third day after the circumcision. If it falls out on Shabbat, Rabbi Elazar ben Azar says you can actually bathe the child. He quotes a pasuk that we know in Sefer Bereshit when the city of Shechem circumcised themselves. Shimon v'Levi waited until the third day of after their circumcision, when the pasuk says they were aching, biyotam ko'avim, and then they went out and killed the entire city. So what do you see from this pasuk? You see that on the third day of the Milah, there is Ke'ev. So therefore, the Elazar ben Azar says, because of that, you're allowed to bathe the child on the third day as well. Safek ve'androgenos en mechalenim alav et Shabbat. Two more cases. What's this case of a Safek? You have a child that you don't know if it was an 8th month baby or a 9th month baby. What's the difference? So Gemara tells us that an 8th month baby cannot live. A 9 month baby can live. So therefore, if you don't know if it's an 8 month or a 9 month, so then already, if it's an 8 month, you don't have to do the Brit Milah on Shabbat, because the child is not going to live anyway. So you cannot make a Shabbat for such a child. We're not talking about today. Today they have incubators and they have technology. We're talking Bizman HaTalmud. So therefore, if you have a Safek, if it's an 8 month or a 9 month, they do not do the Milah according to this Mishnah on Shabbat. Or an androgynous. What is an androgynous? He has both simanim. He has the signs of a male and he has the signs of a female. So Tanna Kamma says, such a Milah you don't do on Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda matir b'androgynos. Rabbi Yehuda says it's permissible with an androgynos on Shabbat. Comes the Gemara and says, "Ve'ha amar tresha marhisin." You told me in the beginning of the Mishnah you could actually bathe the child on Shabbat. What are you telling me right after mizalef that you can only sprinkle them with a hand and not with a keli? So we have two answers to this question. Rav Yehuda v'Rabba bar Abu de'amri tarvayu. So the first answer is from Rav Yehuda and Rabba bar Abu. They both said, ketzad tini. You have to learn the Mishnah as a ketzad. The Mishnah is telling you how. Meaning like this. Marchisin et hakatan ben lefne milah ben lachal milah. You're allowed to bathe the child before the milah and after the milah. Ketzad. Oh, how do you bathe the child before and after? Mizalfin ala biyad abalobikli. So really the Mishnah is telling you you can't bathe the child regularly. Bathing with hot water on Shabbat is really asur. However, in this case over here, they allow you to do it bishinui. How do you do it bishinui? You sprinkle it. And not only do you sprinkle it, but you can't even use a keli, because that's also considered maybe the normal way. So therefore you need two shinuim. You have to do it biziluf and also biyad. So therefore, according to this first answer, you're not allowed to bathe the child at all. What the Mishnah is saying, marchisin. Oh, ketzad marchisin, biziluf. So the second part of the Mishnah is actually an interpretation
to the first part. Amar Rava. Rava doesn't like this answer. Veha marhisin ketani. So what are you talking? The Mishnah says marhisin. Then you marhisin means what? To bathe. Then you tell me what bathing means. Sprinkling? That's a dohak. El amar Rava. Haki ketani. Marhisin etakatan. Ben melefne mila. Ben lahara mila. Biyom harishon kedarko. Which means, on the first day, meaning the day of the Milah, even if it fell out on Shabbat, no problem, you can actually bathe the child regularly. Ubayom ha-shilishi she'chal liyot b'Shabbat, mezalfin ala b'yad, aval lo b'keli. However, on the third day, that's when Ziluf comes into the picture, which means, according to Rashi, Tanakama will hold day one, and for that matter, even day two, L'chitza is going to be permissible. The child is in, let's say, you know, a more serious situation on those days. Therefore, they allow you to even bathe the child with hot water if those days came out on Shabbat. However, if the third day came out on Shabbat, then already Tanna Kamma says you can only do ziluf biyad. And the Bilhazab ibn Azariyah comes along and says, on the third day you can even do rechitza. So it comes out the way Rabbah's learning, the only machlok in the Mishnah is on the third day. The first 2 days, everybody agrees if it comes out on Shabbat, rechitza, bechamin, no problem. Where's the machloket? Third day, that falls out on Shabbat. Tanna Kamma says, ziluf biyad. The Bilhazab ibn Azariyah will say what? Full-fledged rechitza. Again, the Mishnah Gemara continues. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omer, marhisin katam yom shlishi, shechal liyot b'shabbat, shne'emar, v'hi b'yom shlishi b'yotam ko'abim. And he bases it on that pasuk. Tanya kevate d'rava. We have a braita to support the way we just learned the Mishnah according to Rava. Marhisin katan ben lifnei mila, ben lahar mila, b'yom rishon kedarko. Clearly, the Braita says on the first day you could do it in the normal way. But on the third day you can only make ziluf biyad. He said, no, even on the third day you're allowed to make a full-fledged rechitza. Even though there's no actual proof to what I'm saying, the Bilhazar says, Zeche de Davar. We have a remez. Shnei Emar, Ve'im Yom Shilishi B'yotam Ko'avim. So he brought this pasuk again to show us that on the third day there's the child is also in Sakana. The point being, we have a Braita now to support Rava's version. What did the Braita clearly say? On the first day it is permissible to make full-fledged rechitza. Where does Ziluf come in? Day three. And there you have a machlok between Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Ushem mizalfin. Now back to Tanna Kamma. When you make ziluf, em mizalfin, no bekos. You cannot make the ziluf, meaning pour the water on the child, not with a cup. Velo bekeala, nor a bowl. Velo bekli, or a vessel. Ela biyad. Atan Tanna Kamma. That opinion is going like Tanna Kamma of our Mishnah. So now the Gemara is on the Braita. May afa pisha enda ya ledavar, zeche ledavar. Why does the Bilhazar say that that pasuk that he quoted is only a zeche? It's only it's a hint. Why isn't that pasuk a full-fledged proof? After all, doesn't it say, on the third day when they were in pain, biyotam koim, so don't you see clearly from this pasuk that the third day, the one that's circumcised is indeed in a situation where the chaurai should be able to tend to his knees, like putting the hot water on him? Why is it only a zecher? So he says, you know why? Mishum de gadol lo salik b'sra hiya. Because an adult, the flesh does not heal immediately or fast. Katan, but by a child, salik b'sra hiya. The flesh heals quickly. In that story over there, who was taking the Brit Milah? Adults. And therefore, you know why on the third day they were in pain? Because adults don't heal as quickly as children. So therefore, it's really not a proof from this pasuk to the situation of a child. Because the reason I'll tell you why the third day over there in Shechem, they were Kavim, because they're adults. Adults, it takes even on the third day, they're still in pain. But a child, it heals quickly. So the Bir Hazar says, I still hold that even by a child on the third day you could bathe him in hot water, even if it falls on a Shabbat. But my proof, don't think it's a 100% full-fledged proof. It's only a remiss, because there is a hiluk between the pasuk and the case that Abil Hazar was talking about. That's why he says zecher l'davar. That's why he says it's only a zecher and it's not a full-fledged. Ha'ud atal kamed Rava. Story, a fellow came in front of Rava. Ori le kishimate. And he made a ruling according to his way of learning the Mishnah. What was the question? They came to him and said, have a baby. It's the first day, the day of the Milah. They want to know, and with Shabbat. They asked Rava, can we bathe the child in hot water before the Milah and after the Milah? So Rava gave him a ruling according to his halakha. Rava learned the Mishnah that on day one, everybody agrees you could do the Chita. So he told him, Mutar, yeah, go bathe the child. Ihlash Rava. Rava subsequently became ill. He became sick. Rava understood that his illness came because he argued on the first rabbis of Yehuda and Rava bar Abu. Because they held that even on day one you're only allowed to make ziluf. Right? There's two ways of learning the Mishnah. So when Rava got sick, he said, oh, I'm probably getting this sickness because I went against those rabbis that held ziluf is only permissible. So he says, Amar, ana bahade targimna desabe lamali. He said, what did I get involved with arguing with the elders? Which means, what did I get involved with? I shouldn't have said this halakha. Jeez, he understood that he got sick because he argued on them. So he said after, he said, what did I involve myself of sticking myself in the machloket over here, bahadeh sabeh, meaning with these elders. It seems Rav Yehuda and Rav Bar Abu were older than Rava. Shows you the humility, even though Rava himself could hold his own. I mean, he's an amorah, he can give an interpretation. But he felt that maybe he got sick because he argued on his elders. Amru le Rabbanan le Rava. So the rabbis came to Rava and said, Rava, what are you worried about? Vahatanya kevate demor. The Gemara actually wrote a braita to support you. Jesus, didn't we bring a braita, Tanya kevate de Rava? Rava, you have nothing to be ashamed of. Your opinion was actually supported from a braita. What are you worried about? Amar lehu matnitin kevatai hudaika. But Rava retracts. Rava says, but you know what? The Mishnah is more precise like them. So Gemara says, Mimai. Well, what's the proof? What did the Bil Hazar say? The language of the Mishnah is Marhisin itakatan. You can bathe the child on the third day that falls out on Shabbat. If you learn like they did, that Tanakhama was only allowing on day one and day two ziluv. Right, Tanakhama never allowed Rechitza, right? According to the first way of learning, Tanakhama was only allowing Ziluf on day one and day two, and day three, nothing. That's the first way of learning, right? Kamar, so Tanakhama Mizdalfin, Kamar, that they were talking about Mizdalfin, Hainu de Kamar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariya, Marhitzin. And that's why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariya comes along and says that no, you're saying what? Ziluf. So Rabbi Elazar comes along and says, no, Marhitzin, I argue on you. That which you say on day one, you could only do Ziluf, I hold, not only I argue with you, it's not Ziluf. You could actually do Rechitza. Ela iyamar Tanakama Marhitzin Bayom Arishon. But if you're learning like I'm learning, that Tanakama says you're allowed to do Rechitza on day one, Kamar, Umzalfin, Bayom Ashilishi, and Ziluf on the third day, meaning according to the way Rava learned the Mishnah. Rechitza the first 2 days, right? Ziluf on the third day, correct? Which is the first day you're allowed to make Rechitza. On the third day you make Ziluf,
So then already, what should have said in the Mishnah? Hay Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer Marchitzin Af Marchitzin Mivele. According to me, Rava says the Mishnah would have been more precise if it would have said the word Af, even Marchitzin. Because where are they arguing? They're arguing on the third day. On the third day, Tanakama says what? Ziluf. Rabbi Elazar should come along and say Ziluf, even Marchitza. Which is he's coming to add not only Zilu, but even Rechitza. According to the first way of learning, Tanakama never allowed Rechitza. Tanakama only talked about Zilu from the beginning. And on the third day, nothing. And therefore Rabbi Elazar comes along and says, no, first of all, Marchitzin, Islam. You say Zilu, I say Marchitzin. But in the second way, which is the way Rabbi learned, Tanakama allowed Rechitza on day one. He allowed Rechitza on day two. On day three he said Ziluf. So it should say, Amar Bil Hazar, Af Marchitzin by Yom Shilishi. Not only could you make Ziluf on Yom Shilishi, you can even do Rechitza. Whereas according to the first way, in the third day, you can't do anything according to Tanakama. So the word Af is not Shayang. According to Tanakama, you can't do anything. So therefore, Rava retracts from his opinion and therefore agrees to his colleagues. And therefore, according to the conclusion, at this point it comes out, day one, day two, only Ziluf according to Tanakama. Day three, nothing. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar, you can even bathe on day three. That is the machloket. Again, the machloket is on all the days. Day one, day two, Tanakama, Ziluf. Day three, zero. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, all 3 days, Rechitza. Ki atar Avdimi, when Avdimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar bin Azar, Halakha, Kerem Azar bin Azariah. Halakha follows the lenient opinion of Rabbi Azar bin Azariah. Havu ba b'maharaba. Now they analyzed it in the West. How far did Rabbi Azar bin Azariah go? Harchatzat kol gufo, or harchatzat mila? What are you bathing now? They have to analyze. Are you bathing the whole child? Or you're only bathing the actual milah? And that's a new question. We didn't discuss now which part of the baby do you bathe. Rabbi Elazar, you say you can bathe him. Bathe what? Whole child or the milah itself? So the Gemara says, Amar lihu, ha'um rabbanan. So one of the rabbis answered, V'rabbi Yaakov, his name is Rabbi Yaakov, Mistavrar hasat kol gufo. Makes sense that we're talking about bathing his whole body. Why? The Isal Kadak Harhasat Mila. Because if you think Rabbi Elazar just came along to tell me, you can only wash the actual Mila itself, Migara Mehamin Al Gabe Makkah, is it worse than being able to bathe any wound with hot water? Which means there's a standing rule that says anytime somebody has a wound anywhere on his body, you could take hot water on Shabbat and put it on the wound. And we're not worried about refuah and all these other things. So, that we know already. Obviously, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah must have been coming to tell us a hidush. Meaning, if he was just coming to tell us, you're allowed to take hot water and put it on the milah. Well, you could do it on anything, any makkah that's permissible. El, it must be the Elazar was coming to tell me what? You could put it on the whole body. He says, "Da'amar Rav." How do we know that's permissible? Because Rav said, "En monin hamin v'shemin me'al gabe makkah b'Shabbat." That there's no problem to take hot water and oil, and according to Tosfot, even if you mix them together, there is no problem to put them on a wound on Shabbat. Matkif lada. So therefore, at this point, the Gemara is assuming that Elazar was talking about full body. That is hidush. Matkif la Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, "Velo shani lach ben chamin shuhamu b'Shabbat lachamin shuhamu me'erev Shabbat." Don't you make a difference between hot water that was heated before Shabbat to hot water that was heated on Shabbat? Meaning, when did we say you're allowed to put hot water on a makkah on Shabbat?
That's talking about hot water that was heated from before Shabbat. But you know what our Mishnah is talking about? Where you actually heated the water on Shabbat. So therefore, I'll tell you, maybe it's talking about only the Milah itself. And you know what the Hiddush of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is? That where normally you can only use water that was heated from before Shabbat, when it comes to Brit Milah, you're allowed to use even water that was heated on Shabbat. But what? Only for the Milah itself. And that's the Hiddush.
Says Gemara says Matkif la Rav Dimi. So Rav Dimi says to Rav Yosef, "Umimai da'acha b'chamin shulchamu b'Shabbat pedigi."
Who told you that our Mishnah is talking about where you heated the water on Shabbat?
Dilma b'chamin shulchamu b'erev Shabbat pedigi.
Maybe we're talking about water that was heated from before Shabbat, which is right away you assume automatically we're talking about you heated it on Shabbat.
So Amar Abayis, Abayis says, Ana ba'ai de'ishnele.
I wanted to answer this question that Rav Dimi asked.
Ve'kadam b'shani l'Rav Yosef.
But Rav Yosef beat me to it. Means I wanted to answer, Rav Yosef jumped the gun.
Me'peresh sakana hu lo.
We know the child is in sakana. And if the child is in sakana, it's obviously permissible to even use water that's heated on Shabbat, which means the rabbis made gezerot about using hot water. Right? They didn't want people to take baths on Shabbat because of gezerot that they made. In this case over here, where the child is in sakana, what's the question? Even if the water was heated on Shabbat, there's going to be no restriction to give it to the child. They're talking about a case of sakana. Oh, so once we're talking about water that was heated on Shabbat, so then already we could say what? That maybe the only thing that Bil Azar bin Azariah allowed was only locally to put the water. Because normally you can put the water on a local makkah. That's because the water was heated before Shabbat. And the Hadush of our Mishnah is what? That even if the water is heated on Shabbat, you could put it locally on the Milah, but that's as far as you can go.
The Gemara says, "Itman nameh ki atar avin amar v'abu amar v'azar v'abu amar b'yohanan halacha ki Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah." And what? Ben b'chamin shuhamu b'Shabbat, ben b'chamin shuhamu me'erev Shabbat.
Whether it's heated on Shabbat itself, and all the more so whether it was heated before Shabbat.
And now, here's the Chiddush. Ben al-Hasat kol gufo, ben al-Hasat milah.
And you know what? Whether it's locally on the milah itself, or even to bathe the whole body. Why?
Because it's sakana hilo.
Once you enter the fact that it's sakana, so then there's no shayla. Forget about bathing the local milah itself. It would be permissible to actually bathe the entire child. The sakana factor changes the whole dynamic, and therefore it would be permissible. Halakha could be hazan, meaning day one for sure you make the chitza. Day two and even day three, full-fledged chitza. Even if the water was heated on Shabbat, even the entire body. So we're taking all three leniencies according to Rabbi Azab. Why? Because the child is considered even that day sakana. Comes the Gemara and continues.
Gufa. We have a statement. Amar Rav. En mon'in chamin v'shemin ma'al gabe makah b'shabbat. Right? We said we do not refrain from putting hot water mixed with oil on a wound on Shabbat. Ushmuel amar noten chutz lemakah.
Shmuel says no. You could place it away from the wound,
v'shotet v'yored lemakah,
and you could let it drip down so it lands on the makah. Logic of Shmuel at this point. We know that the rabbis made a restriction against doing things that are medicinal on Shabbat. Gezerah that you might come to actually crush the medicine. You might crush the spices. So Shmuel is not allowing you to put it directly on the makkah itself, but he lets you put it somewhere else and let it drip down by itself. That is the machloket. So comes the Gemara and says, Metime, we have a question from a Braita. En notnin shemen vechamin al gabe moch liten al gabe makkah b'shabbat.
Clearly it says, you're not allowed to put oil and water on a moch, on let's say on a pad, in order to put it on the makkah on Shabbat. She says, how did you tell me in the Braita you told me, or Rav, you told me, you could put hot water and oil on the makkah. Here we have a clear Braita that says you cannot put it on the pad in order to put it on the makkah. And we're assuming why? Because it's medicinal. Gemara says, no, different reason. Hata mishum sehita. That's a different idea, because when you're putting it on the pad, we're concerned you might come to squeeze it. But to put it directly on the makkah itself, no problem according to Rav. Tashema, en notnin chamin v'shemin al gabe moch, sh'al gabe makkah b'shabbat.
Different question. Let's say the pad is already on the makkah. It's still forbidden to pour oil and water on the pad that's on the makkah. Again, the Gemara is asking this question because here it seems it's less of a sechita issue because the pad is already on the makkah itself. And still you're telling me asur. Question on Rav.
Gemara said, "Hatam namim mishum sechita."
Also because of sechita. Because you still might come to squeeze the pad, and therefore it's going to be asur.
So again, no problem to put it at this point directly on it, according to Rav, but using a pad, putting the liquid on it, is asur for a reason of sechita. However, the Gemara says, Tanya kivate de Shmuel. Now we have a braita, however, to support the opinion of Shmuel. En notnin hamin v'shemin al gabe makkah b'shabbat. Clearly, you cannot put it even directly on the makkah on Shabbat. Aval notnin chutz lemakkah. You could put it away from the makkah, v'shotet v'yored lemakkah. And that is the halakha. Because we have a braita now to support Shemuel that directly on it, no, because it's refuah. However, when you put it away, so that already is not mukhah that you're doing it for it if you are. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Notnin al gabe makkah moch yavish. You're allowed to take a pad, let's say, or a cloth that is dry. The sfog yavish. Sfog is like it's a sponge that's dry also, and you can place it on the makkah. Avalo gemi yavish. Not a type of, let's say, reed that is dry. Velo kititin yevishim, which is if you have, let's say, a thin cloth, that's kititin, that she says a thin cloth, you're not allowed to put that on the makkah. So the Gemara says, kasha kititin a kititin. We have a question from kititin to kititin, meaning you tell me in the beginning of the braita, a moch, that's a cloth that's dry, put it on the makkah. If you have kititin yevishim, you can't put it. What's the difference? It's a dry cloth. One place you tell me you can't put a dry cloth on the makkah, one place you say you can't. So kasha kititin, a kititin. So the Gemara says, la kasha, ha behate, ha behatike. Which means, one is talking about new cloths, and one is talking about old cloths. A new cloth that was never on the wound before, when you put it on, when it's dry, has healing powers. That's asur. However, an old one that was on the wound already and came off and you want to put it back, that's permissible. Because once it's old, it doesn't have the healing powers and therefore is mutar antra. So there's a difference between new cloths and old. The new ones being asur and the old ones being mutar. Comes to Gemara and concludes, Amar Abaye, Shma Mina. We learn from here, Hane Ketitin Masu. Must be that cloths do have medicinal value, and they indeed cure. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen. Amen.